Blog Talk Radio.
Turnbuckle Terminal fans, welcome to the show here on another Sunday afternoon. We are wrapping up currently an active month today, but real quick, if you're looking for wrestling, you can find me later today at Blue Collar Wrestling in Portland, Oregon. You can also find wrestling up in Alaska and Palmer, Alaska for NSA Wrestling. So make sure if you're anywhere near there, you can go support them. Y-Period Jones' final show with that particular company, so get out there and support him. And without further ado, I want to welcome back to the show someone who has not been here for a while. We are thrilled to have him back. Currently inactive, but you never say never in wrestling. Karn Alexander, welcome back to the show. Well, since it has been a while since you were here. You've wrestled just very sporadically the last couple of years. Do you want to tell the listeners why that is?
Yeah, I actually, about, I guess it was 5 or so years ago, kind of transitioned into film acting and theater. And I got my Bachelor of Fine Arts degree in performance or in acting at Ball State University. And I've just been kind of enjoying that kind of style of performance rather than the sports entertainment that I used to do.
There are certain skill sets within wrestling that also are prevalent within acting. Having done both of them, what would you say are the comparisons and the contrasts that you can make between acting and wrestling?
Yeah, I mean, there definitely are a lot of similarities, as one would assume, with the performance. The big difference, though, that I found when I first got into acting was that wrestling is way more over the top. One would say more pageantry. Lots more interaction with the crowd and such, and acting in most cases anyway, we don't want to say all cases, but in most cases is more naturalistic and in realism and wants to be more like taken into another reality rather than putting on a show, so to speak. But with stuff that was very similar, it was, you know, both times getting used to performing for an audience, even though it's in different ways. So you definitely have to have that sense of there being people watching you, which was probably the main similarity. Something like more specific, my training in wrestling as far as like combat goes really helped out in like stage combat, which I quickly found was one of my niches, if you'll, so to speak. And I was really naturally really good at that since I had 8 years of professional wrestling training. Even when it came to stage combat with swords and such, I still had kind of a natural outlook on it and a natural like skill set to pick it up really quickly.
Now, when you are acting, say in a play or anything such as that, obviously you are more accustomed to physicality, having wrestled for so many years. Do directors and producers of plays take that background into account when they're assigning parts? Do they tend to give you the more physical type of roles, or is that not really a factor when you're being cast?
Well, it really depends on the director or the casting agent, depending on what kind of project it is. a lot of times I do get typecast into certain roles that are more, will you say, like intimidating or so on and so forth in that route. Early on, anyway, that was the case. As things progressed and I kind of learned more as far as like the acting side of things went and the performing arts side of things, I started getting cast in a little wider range of variety. I was in a drama called The Great Godpan, which was not at all a character that was, you know, supposed to be physically imposing or anything like that. And it was a really good experience for me. After that, I kind of like learned to open up more and be in, you know, cast in different roles that, like I said, weren't more intimidating or the villain, so to speak. That's like another typecast I kind of got cast in at first. However, I do find in film, I do get cast as that a lot. I get cast as, you know, the bigger, either the big dumb guy or the best friend, so to speak, or the villain. And a lot of times it's the genre that I get cast in the most is horror films. So it really just depends on what a director might want to go, you know, a more obscure route and have someone like me be, you know, something that you wouldn't expect at all, like the awkward, shy guy, if you will. And like I said, it just depends on the project, the director, the casting director, what their vision is. And sometimes you'll walk into a room for an audition and they'll see something they like that they hadn't thought of before, and you'll basically just get cast off of, you know, a split-second change. So, yeah, it really depends. But I have gotten, at Ball State, I was blessed to have a variety of different types of roles, so I could do more once I got out of graduation. Actually, after graduation, I got to do Shakespeare that I never thought was, you know, going to be something I'd really get into, but I really enjoyed it. I did a drama recently in Louisville, so yeah, I guess like it comes down to just like the person who, what they want for their project in the end.
In the last few weeks, for fans that may not realize it, Anthony Toitelli and Kenzie Alexander recently welcomed their first child into the world. Now, you played an instrumental part in a very early stage of both of their careers, especially Kenzie, who valeted for you on many shows across many different promotions when she was starting. What was it like seeing your sister give birth to one of your longtime rivals' sons?
Well, I mean, first of all, I have to say congratulations to them both. That's you know, amazing. I'm very happy for them. One of the matches that I did come out of retirement, so to speak, for was a match against Anthony at an indie pop con a few years ago. And it was at that pop con that on a panel for professional wrestling that we were both on, he decided that would be the best time to propose to my sister. And it was kind of an awkward moment because I obviously had no idea. No one knew it was going to happen. So at that point I was like, well, you know, if this is really what you both want, you're going to have to fight for her because she's been by my side for years and you're just coming out of nowhere basically. And, you know, saying, hey, this is, you know, we're just going to change everything. So we had a match, and I kind of knew that I was going to do this at the end of the match, regardless of the outcome. But at the end of the match, he did get the best of me. And afterwards, he was kind of hesitant to speak with me, but I got on the mic, and, you know, I said, congratulations, please take care of her. And since then, he's done so. He's made sure she's stayed safe and in and out of the business of wrestling. And I'm, like I said, I'm very happy for both of them. And I haven't really kept in touch as much as I'd like, but I have followed, you know, everything they've been doing on Facebook and social media. And I see some videos of matches whenever I can, because obviously I'm very busy with the acting in my own career at this point in time, and we're a ways away as far as distance goes. But yeah, I kept up with them, and I knew, you know, they when they had the reveal that they were going to have a child, and I've been, you know, keeping up with that, and it's just great to see that, you know, someone that I put my trust into has, you know, kept his word, and, you know, they're married now, they have a kid, and I don't see, being an issue at this point at all. Like, I trust Anthony completely as far as, you know, like I said, in and out of the ring, and whatever qualms I had with him before, whatever doubts I had, he's definitely proven himself to me.
I would just like to point out that Kinsey and Anthony, two of my favorite people I've ever met in the business. Great, great kids. Very happy for them. And possibly years down the road, do you think they'll eventually get maybe a one-off or maybe a prolonged run, an uncle and nephew tag team?
You never know. Like you said, never say never in the business. There's been, like you said, after I retired, there's been a couple times that I have, you know, stepped back in the ring for special occasions. And I would say that if my nephew ever did want to get in the ring, if it wasn't, you know, as a team with his father, and that wasn't possible, I would hope to be the next person to step in and take that place.
Now, also, one of the things that fans may know you from is Pro Wrestling Illustrated. You were in there a few different times. One of the times they wrote about you and sort of a featured story detailing your battle with epilepsy, and it was a really inspirational article that came out. Can you tell the fans a little bit about the article and how that came to be?
Yeah, it was actually quite a surprise blessing that I was lucky enough to get featured in such a great magazine, and a great outlet for fans to read on different wrestlers that they might not, you know about in the industry. And it was just, you know, great to kind of tell my story in a sense that I wouldn't usually get to, because I'm not going to go on the mic as Karn and be like, you know, hey, everybody, I, you know, have these issues, and, you know, I just want to say that, you know, because that's not Karn's style. Karn's more of, you know, a guy who really doesn't care. So it was great to, you know, talk more as myself for once and have someone else kind of word it for me so I didn't, you know, have to do it directly. But yeah, it was kind of a struggle at first because I will say my epilepsy has been under control for quite a number of years, but I still have to take medication, and it still does cause some sort of like different side effects, like dealing with anxiety and such. And there have been times where I've unfortunately had to cancel a match, not like often, but had to cancel a match or so just because of what I think of as safety reasons. You know, someone could like seriously get hurt if something, you know, an issue popped up with that in the ring. And if I feel that needs to be done, I obviously, that's the first thing I'm going to consider is the safety of myself and anyone else that might be involved. But it was great to, you know, have people, you know about that. And there are issues with it. It's great that they featured quite a few people in that type of genre of article, because outside of the realm of, you know, just a normal healthy person doing this and the risks it causes, somebody who has, you know, like me with epilepsy or, you know, any other health issues, it's an even greater risk for them. And they still, you know, people like me that did it for a number of years, and people are still out there, you know, wrestling with some of these issues, still do it for, you know, the love of the sport and the love of the fans. And it's great that that can be honored in a way that it wouldn't be able to otherwise.
Obviously, with the advent of social media and the internet and that type of thing, PWI maybe not as prestigious as it was years earlier when magazines as a genre were much more popular, but still a lot of wrestlers have a career goal of getting into the magazine. Once you are in said magazine, was that something that meant a great deal to you, or was it just sort of another piece of business that you were hoping to get your name out there a little bit better?
Oh no, that was a big accomplishment for me, because like I said, there are, you know, a lot of wrestlers that are known from that magazine. So even though magazines, like you said, aren't, you know, the biggest outlet anymore, there are still, you know, thousands of people that will see your face and your story that might not be able to see that in any other way. I mean, even with social media, I feel like social media is, you know, so flooded that, you know, wrestling fans or whoever can, like, scroll through their feed or whatnot, and every other post is a wrestling post, so they're only going to stop on the people they already know. Someone, you know, uses their money to buy a magazine, they're going to look at every single page because they're going to want to get their money's worth. So, yeah, it was a stepping stone for me to be featured in such a great magazine itself. But it was also, you know, personally just kind of humbling to be one of the people that they were like, this is an interesting enough story and, you know, a good enough wrestler that we want this person other than who knows how many other people in our magazine, even just this one or two times. So, yeah, it was a very big deal for me.
Now, one of the things that is starting to come back into prominence just very recently in wrestling is the role of manager. The national company is starting to bring back a few managers now, where there was a time where there were virtually none. Independence has managers much more prominently, but, you know, still was on a declining path as far as managers go. You had a few different managers in your day. Who do you think were some of the better managers that you worked with in your career?
I definitely think that the most entertaining combo that I ever experienced was myself and my sister, just because me and Kinsey had such a dynamic that was different from, you know, the general, hey, I'm, you know, going to represent this person. She was my sister, and it wasn't just her, you know, representing me. It was, you know, our relationship as brother and sister that made it so great. And you hadn't seen that in a while at that point. Because I was wondering at that point in time, I was like, man, I should really get a manager. And I'm like, but I don't want to just have, you know, somebody to have somebody. So at that point, I was like, well, maybe, you know, the brother and sister thing hasn't been done in a while. Let's see if she wants to do it. And she did. So, and it just kept growing and growing to the point where there were, you know, catchphrases happening and different things we would make sure we would do every match for the fans that people liked. So I would definitely say Kenzie's probably one of my favorite managers out of everyone that I've worked with. And probably the most substantial and long-term, because I had worked with other managers before, but it was really just like it, either just a one promotion or it was just like an every now and then thing, because it just didn't really stick as much. But me and Kinsey worked in such a way, like I said, that was so unique that it grew into something where every time I had a match, she would be there.
We've discussed on here before in previous appearances that you started out at Ohio Valley Wrestling, which when you started as well as to present day is a very prominent independent company. They have aligned with national companies over the years at different points. They have changed ownership a few times since you were there. Al Snow, roughly a year ago, purchased that company. But looking back at your days there, how important do you think it was to your career to to have come out of Ohio Valley Wrestling?
Well, I mean, to be honest, like when I was looking for wrestling schools, the main thing I was looking for was a location closest to home, and that was kind of how I found Ohio Valley Wrestling. So I got lucky in a sense that it ended up being, you know, a very reputable school, because that's not something I really looked into. I looked into, you know, because for the first few months I was driving back and forth from central Indiana, which was still a long drive, but it was much more reachable than, like, say, Philadelphia or somewhere. But I think it really kind of set the groundwork for the way that I approached everything in wrestling. Rip Rogers is, like, and anyone who has been to Ohio Valley Wrestling, I think, would agree with this. He is the absolute best professional wrestling trainer in the world. And I say that with the most confidence I can. Now, I haven't, like, obviously trained with every trainer, but considering the amount of talent that he has put into WWE and TNA and, you know, on the higher level indies, his career kind of speaks for itself. But it's because of him that I have a certain approach to wrestling that is a style that I can kind of base everything on that I do in the business. And it gave me, when I went out on the indies on my own, anyone I kind of, you know, had got to work with, I could mold that style into, you know, whatever I needed to be able to work with said person or opponent that I had. And in addition, he, you know, his way of, you know, making sure that not just the in-ring work, but the out-of-ring work, like promos and such, were a very big part of our training. And I mean, if it wasn't for him, I might not even be in, you know, the performing arts right now. Because eventually I got to the point where I at first I hated promos like most people do. Most people just want to wrestle and get in the ring. But it ended up being the character work and stuff that really I fell in love with. And because of that training and that start, I think that's why I'm, you know, where I'm at today, and just not just, you know, where I got in wrestling, but also, you know, in acting and the career that I have now. So yeah, I would say that Ohio Valley Wrestling, anyone who ever asked me when I was on the indies, like where they should go to get more training or where they should, you know, start out if they were just starting out, I'd be like, Ohio Valley Wrestling, no question. Because yeah, it definitely laid the groundwork for me in, you know, basically the rest of my life. It taught me, you know, respect, the people there, even more than just the trainers, just the wrestlers as well. I learned something from everyone. Everyone was, like, willing to help everybody make the show great. It wasn't, you know, a place that was, I'm just going to care about myself and where I can get. It was a place that really focused on how can we make this promotion and this show the best it can be. And I've taken that mentality with me to, you know, every indie I went to, even if most people in the indie or it was an indie that was like, hey, I'm just here to help myself, I tried to take the mentality of how can I help this show. And I take that with me to every production of theater I'm in or every film I'm on. I'm like, how can I make this the best project it can be? How can I personally help it to that point? So, yeah, I got a lot out of Ohio Valley Wrestling, not just in wrestling, but in overall life, if I'm being honest.
Well, we have hit the part of the show where we have a game we play called Word Association. You have done this game before. I will mention the names of some people that you most likely have come across in your career. First word to describe them is your answer. Are you prepared for a round of Word Association?
Yeah, let's do it.
Here we go. First name, Kinsey Alexander.
Oh, stubborn.
Osiris.
Imposing.
Dash Venture.
Dash Venture. I haven't heard that name in a while. But super awkward. That's what I'm going to say for him.
Troy Miller.
Troy Miller, very humbling.
Rip Rogers.
Rip Rogers' genius.
Jesse Bell Smothers.
Just so beautiful.
Mickey Knuckles.
Very talented.
Hillbilly Jed.
Hillbilly Jed. he's also very talented. But I'm going to say for him, unique, very unique person as well.
Bob Holly.
Bob Holly. Oh man, I remember that match very well. But very kind, actually. I want to say kind for him. He's a very kind individual.
Elvis Pridemore.
Elvis Pridemore. Oh yeah, I remember him now. Took me a second. Very dedicated. Dedicated is what I'm going to go with.
Ryan Howe.
Now, let me think on this one for a second. He's definitely a rocker, but I'm going to say for Ryan Howe, very helpful. He helped me a lot early on when he was at OVW.
Jamin Olavencia.
Jamin Olavencia. I mean, what? I have so many words for that guy. I, like, owe him a lot. But I'm also going to say dedicated for him, but in a sense that I don't know, like, no matter what the guy does, it's always to the best, like, best visibility and even further. He, like, never gives up.
And the last name, Gregory Iron.
Gregory Iron. I have a story about Gregory Iron I could tell. But Gregory Iron, let's see. I mean, honestly, dude is just so random. Like, every Facebook post I see about him, like, that he makes is, I just literally am like, what in the world is this guy doing? So, yeah, I'm going to have to go with the random on him.
I would love to hear a Gregory Iron story.
All right. I was wondering if you're going to ask for it. Okay, so I'm sure most listeners are going to be familiar with an event called the Gathering of the Juggalos, which is where one of my first encounters with Gregory Iron was. We actually, like, we were both doing some wrestling stuff, so we ended up, you know, walking around the campgrounds, if you will, for one of the days, and there was one guy that we came across that had a sign around his neck that said he would let anyone kick him in the balls for a dollar. And we walked up to him, and Gregory's like, he's like, so are you serious about this? The guy's like, yeah, man, all you got to do is pay a dollar. As hard as you want. He was clearly on something. But Greg's just like, well, I mean, I feel bad just giving you a dollar. So I think he ended up giving him, like, I don't know how much he gave him. He's like, but I can do it. He's like, awesome, man, awesome. I don't know why this guy needs money so bad. I can only imagine. But dude, like, stood there with his legs spread, and Greg literally straight up, like, punted him in the nuts. And I would be surprised if the dude did not have to go to the hospital at least, you know, a few hours later, because I thought he was gonna die, but he made like $4 out of it. So he at least got himself a snack later. I don't know, but that was one of my first encounters with Gregory Iron, and it was I feel like it was a magical experience.
That's one of the better Gregory Iron stories that involve Karn Alexander I've heard. I've heard a few.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I would like to hear another one. I don't know how many are out there.
At least two.
Okay.
Now, as I recall it, you also had a very interesting story about a time that some neighbors wandered into the Davis Arena when Rip Rogers was conducting one of his training sessions. Do you recall that?
I do. But to tell that story, I first got to, like, ask, because is there like a parental advisory or anything on this show? Because to quote Rip Rogers, I kind of have to use some questionable words.
No, go right ahead. I'm well aware of Rip Rogers' choice of words.
All right. So we're just, you know, doing our, I think it was at the time, it was either Saturday or Sunday training. And Rip used to make us, like, go for hours chain wrestling. And he would just, like, yell out what he wanted us to, like, what body part we were supposed to work and how we were supposed to do it, whatever. But we would do that for, like, hours on end. And I think it was during one of those sessions that, you know, we're all spread out to the arena and these people just walk in and they're wearing, like, these worker clothes and stuff. And they were from the next warehouse over. And Rip rings the bell and we all stop. And he's like, hello, excuse me, can I help you? And they're like, oh, we just, you know, wanted to see what was going on here. He's like, oh, you just wanted to see what was fucking going on in here. Okay, all right, well, let's go see what you do. Let's go, where's your work at? Let's take us over there. Come on. He just, like, rushes them. And like, he's like, come on, guys. And has everyone, like, start following him. And he's like, what, you just want us to come fucking watch you work? You do your jobs? How about just over and over again, just, like, berating them with, like, every word in the book. And they just, like, were like, I don't know if they were, like, scared for their lives or what, but they're just all of a sudden this mob of large individual people, like, with Rip Rogers leading the charge, just rushing them out the door and followed them to their work. And then finally they, like, went away, and he was just like, motherfuckers coming over here trying to fucking interrupt my job and what I do. He's like, get back to work. Go back to chains. And it was just a crazy experience that at that point in time I realized how, you know, and if I hadn't before, any questions I had about the passion Rip Rogers shows for the business was definitely shown in that moment.
Well, at this point in time, my co-host QT Vokes is standing by, and I'm sure he has a plethora of questions, so I'm going to pass things over to QT for a bit.
All right.
Well, thank you, Sign Guy. Hello, Karn.
How you doing?
Pretty good. Not bad. Karn, Gene Simmons of KISS had a role as a villain in the movie Runaway. He had to work with co-stars Tom Selleck and Christy Alley, the bartender in Cheers. Prior to that, he did not have any acting experience, but I think he got the role because he certainly was at home in front of large crowds in his demon persona outfit. And Henry Rollins of the rock group Black Flag recently had several appearances on the Sons of Anarchy. How honored would you be to work with any rock stars should you get any roles like Gene Simmons or Henry Rollins?
I mean, I would absolutely be honored. I mean, anyone who is, regardless of their experience or, you know, their background, if they're good enough to get cast into a show because that's where they fit, then you know, I would, you know, definitely treat them as, you know, anyone else I would on a project, whether they're an actor or not. I mean, it takes, even for someone who is, you know, from a different background, it takes a lot to still, you know, adapt and adjust to either an on-camera or on-stage role because, like I said before, there are similarities between, like, wrestling and acting, but acting is another animal in itself. So, in a sense, I'd, you know, be even more respectful of them in the sense that they're doing something completely new that they aren't used to and still, you know, being able to essentially kill it because that's, you know, they're the person that's for that role. So they're going to, you know, embody it and inhabit it in a way that no one else can. So absolutely, I would be honored to, you know, be on stage with anyone like that.
Now, to the credit, actually, Gene Simmons did pretty well in his villain role in that movie Runaway. And I got to give the edge, even then, over him to Henry Rollins because I thought his acting in Sons of Anarchy was very good. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, like if the director, the casting director thinks you are right for the role, I feel like, you know, most people share my mentality of like, I'm, you know, even if I'm you know, from some other background, I'm going to make this project as good as I can. And it really, a lot of times, comes down to how good the director is, because any director that knows that you're from a different background is going to direct you usually in a different way that he would a, you know, professionally trained actor, because he or she knows that you're going to respond to a different language because you've never done this before. So a lot of times it is, you know, comes down to how directable the person is going to be and how, what approach the director takes to direct them.
Well, one of the first females to go mainstream in directing was Penny Marshall of Laverne and Shirley. In hindsight, if you could have time traveled, how great would it have been if you could have worked with Penny Marshall as your director?
I think it would have been amazing. I would definitely, there's a lot of, you know, directors that I would like to work with, past and present. Obviously, past is, some of them are not going to be doable now because they're long gone. But yeah, any director that is you know recognized on that level, it would be an honor to work with for almost you know any project.
Do you believe Penny Marshall would have been a good wrestling manager in the state of Indiana?
I'm not exactly sure how to answer that, but I feel like she, you know, if you, you know, gave her the challenge, she would definitely step up.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. Well, Karn, in the 90s, Jerry Seinfeld was paid $1 million an episode for Seinfeld. The cast of Friends was also paid very well. And recently, Penny Howard, Leonard and Guther Prawley were paid upwards of $800,000 an episode on The Big Bang Theory. They were going to be paid more, but they gave some of their new contract to the actors that played Bernadette and Amy Farrah Fowler. How much would it mean to you if you could appear on their final episode of The Big Bang, a show that even had world-famous physicist Stephen Hawking on it, and even had Stephen Hawking cracking some jokes?
That would be definitely interesting to specifically be in that show based on, you know, my former roles that I've had and how I've recently been cast and stuff. So it would definitely be a different genre for me, but I would love to, I mean, I would personally love to like take on new challenges as, you know, they come to me. So it would be exciting having a different genre to be in, and obviously work with all those spectacular actors would be an honor in itself. And I think it's great that a lot of those main stars took pay cuts so that they could help out some of the people they thought were equally valuable on the show. I think that's a really, really honorable thing to do, and really cool, because I actually didn't know about that. But yeah, it would be great to, you know, work with it. I love working with new people, like I said, new genres, and just like having new challenges. So overall, it would be a great experience, I think.
Now, speaking of the cast of Friends, which one of these two characters could have taken more of your knife-edge chops, Joey or Chandler?
I mean, in the show, Joey plays an actor, so we got to take that into consideration. Probably Joey.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, I think probably just based on their demeanors as characters, I think I would go with Joey.
Wow. I think even Phoebe Buffay could take more knife-edge chops than either Joey or Chandler from you. Yes, Phoebe Buffay.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, probably any of the women could. That show has like the women or the female roles in there are really strong roles there. Really enjoy that show. But yeah, I'm going to have to agree with you on that one.
Wow, okay. All right. Well, Karn, Tom Hanks had the starring role in Saving Private Ryan, and Clint Eastwood, Kelly Savalas, and Don Rickles starred in the movie Kelly's Heroes. How much would it mean to you to someday star in a war movie and perhaps even meet a surviving member of World War II, of which there are fewer and fewer every year, or maybe even meet a Korean War vet who maybe fought the Chinese army at the Chosin Reservoir?
I think that would be fantastic. My my grandfather was involved in World War II. He's passed away now, but he was involved in World War II. My former stepfather was in the army, as well as a few other family members. So it would be great to be in one of those movies, especially because out of high school I attempted to join the Army Reserves, and because of my epilepsy I was denied. So it would be great to kind of get in that mindset and, you know, try to experience to the point that I could what that would be like and have the opportunity to honor those people.
Wow. Okay. All right. I did ask you that question because I recently saw a World War II and Korean vet on the Fort Lewis Army base. Pretty
rare
sighting.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. All right. Well, Karn, if you could travel back in time and be on one of these shows, but you could only be on one of them, which one would you choose? Three's Company, Good Times, Sanford and Son, Cheers, or Welcome Back, Kotter?
Probably Cheers. I think that's
one
I'm most familiar with, and I like that it's mostly set in a bar. That's fun. So, and I think just the cast I would mesh with a little better than probably the others. So that'd probably be the one I would pick.
Oh, okay. Well, now Welcome Back, Kotter. That was set in the gritty neighborhood or borough of New York, Brooklyn. You know, I think you would have gotten well with Juan Epstein.
Yeah. That one I would have to do a little research on. I'm not too familiar with it, but I definitely take your word on that. Sounds like something I'd be involved in.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Karn, I also saw your YouTube video entitled Chuck McRoberts versus Karn Alexander 10-11-08. And you entered the and you entered the ring wearing a black and red robe. It looks much the same as the one Northwest wrestler Budget Deficit wears or used to wear to Uncle Sam's Tavern in Spanaway, Washington. My question is, do you still have that black and red robe, or did you auction it off to charity after having autographed it?
I actually still have it, and it was recently used in a performance that me and one of my classmates did, where he wore it as a wizard that he played.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, very good. Okay. Well, Karn, at the 2:30 mark of this video, even before the bell had rung, and even before the referee had checked for foreign objects, Chuck McRoberts, who I believe should be called Chuck McNuggets, cowardly attacked you from behind. Was he trying to gain an early advantage out of sheer desperation?
I believe, if I remember correctly, forgive me, 08 was a while ago, but if I remember correctly, I had multiple times attacked him from behind, so I think it was more about payback than anything.
Oh, payback. Wow. All right. Okay. Okay. Well, now he tried to pull a Rey Mysterio on you at the 410 mark, more specifically a Rey Mysterio 619, but you caught both his legs and maneuvered him between the middle and bottom rope, and at the 420 mark, you fell to the canvas with both his legs while his torso and throat shot up into the second rope, teeter-totter style. I myself could never get the name of this move. Do you know what it's called?
I know that I used to when I did it. thought it was like a slingshot or something like that, something similar.
Yep.
I personally didn't have like a unique name for it when I did it, that's for sure. It was just the move I did when people tried to do the 619 to me.
Oh, okay. All right. Whatever it is, it's very devastating. Yes, very devastating. Okay.
It worked that time at least.
What's that?
I said it worked that time at least.
Oh, yes. Yes, it did. And also, Karn, you tried a high-risk aerial maneuver off the top turnbuckle and completed a 360-degree flip, but you missed Mr. McNuggets. He then gave you three consecutive clotheslines, but the video abruptly ended at the 9 minute and 59 second mark. do you recall getting the win in that black and yellow ring?
Oh man, I'm not sure. I know there's a part two to the video. So search may have to be done to find it. But I do know that me and Chuck had many a battle that are on YouTube. So on that specific day in 2008, I cannot exactly recall who was the victor. I believe, if I am remembering correctly, most of our bouts ended in a disqualification on one of the other's parts.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yes.
All right. Well, Karn, I'm going to be a little bit long here, but I'm going to give you a brief synopsis of the WWE Hall of Fame class of 2015, who was inducted, and compare it to the class of 2016, and I'd like your opinion of which one you would attend. Now,
all right.
The WWE Hall of Fame class for 2015 featured the second ever red carpet event as a 1 hour pre-show prior to the start of the event. The pre-show in 2015 was hosted by Michael Cole, Maria Menounos, Brian Saxton, and Renee Young. Rikishi was inducted by his sons, the Usos, Jimmy and Jay Uso. The Usos spoke about what it was like growing up with their father's rear end being the focus on TV. Following the induction, the three recreated one of my all-time favorites, the two cool dance, including Jimmy doing the worm. You then had Larry Zbysko, who was inducted by Bruno Sammartino. Adria Blaze was inducted by Natalia. Blaze's husband was in attendance the first time she had seen him in nearly a year due to his active status in the military. During Blaze's speech, she asked Natalia to come back out so she can make an old wrong right. Natalia brought with her a metal trash can, which she places beside Blaze. Blaze then pulled several gags out before pulling the WWF Women's Championship belt out of the garbage, which she had thrown in the garbage 20 years earlier on Monday Nitro. The first Warrior Award for those who have exhibited unwavering strength and perseverance and who lived lives with courage was handed out. The first Warrior was given to Connor Mike McKellick and presented by the Warrior's wife, Dana, as well as Daniel Bryan. The award was accepted by Connor's father, Steve. You then had the Bushwhackers, and they were inducted by John Laurinaitis. Kevin Nash was inducted by Shawn Michaels. Tatsumi Fujiyami was inducted by Ric Flair. And Arnold Schwarzenegger, no other than the Terminator himself, was inducted by Triple H. But then you had the class of 2016, Stan Hansen was inducted by Vader. The Godfather was inducted by long-term friend, whom he often traveled down the road with, the member of the Acolyte's Protection Agency, John Bradshaw Layfield and Ron Simmons. And the Fabulous Freebirds were the group inducted into the Hall of Fame. Representing them was Michael Hayes, Terry Gordy, represented by his son Ray Gordy, Buddy Roberts, represented by his son Buddy Roberts Jr., and Jimmy Garvin. The Freebirds were inducted by the New Day members Big E, Kofi Kingston, one of my favorites, and Xavier Woods. Following the induction, Hayes sang their song Bad Street USA. Now that was very good, huge. I think Bad Street USA is one of Sign Guy's favorites. Yes, okay. Now the Big Boss Man was inducted by Slick. Very good. Now due to his passing, his induction was accepted by his wife Angela and his daughters Lacey and Megan. Now, Snoop Dogg was inducted by John Cena. Snoop Dogg spoke about what it was like growing up a fan of professional wrestling and gave what an honor it was to see his cousin Sasha Banks now wrestling for the WWE. So, boy, you had two very good classes here. And we can't forget that Sting was inducted by Ric Flair. So which one of these would you choose, the class of 2016 or 2017? I mean 2015.
Oh, man. I feel like I'm going to have to go with 2015 for a couple mm-hmm. reasons. Definitely the first Warrior Award was something that was really momentous, even to me. I followed, even though I wasn't, you know, in wrestling at the time or really watching it, I still kind of followed that kind of storyline and what was going on with that with Connor, and I thought that was really cool that they started doing that. So that was one thing that I really liked about the 2015 class. And I mean, there was just, I think, more wrestlers that I kind of resonated with in the 2015 than the 2016. And I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger, like, how can you beat that? I mean, that's a tough thing to beat. Like you said, the Terminator himself.
That's true. And for the class of 2016, Snoop Dogg doesn't exactly exhibit Terminator-like status or persona.
No. And, well, if we're being honest here, I am an aspiring, or I am an actor now, not necessarily a rapper, so... So I mean,
there's
that as well. So, not that I don't like Snoop Dogg and, you know, respect his music and listen to it every now and then. I just, you know, have more similarities with Arnold Schwarzenegger, I believe.
Oh, okay. Well, that's true. Now, do you know if Snoop Dogg has starred in any movies?
He was in the horror movie Bones.
Oh, okay. All right.
I actually own that one.
I wonder if he was in Boys in the Hood. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
I'll have to check. Okay. All right. Well, Karn, it was good talking with you, and I'm going to give it back over to Sign Guy.
All right.
Well, Karn Alexander, we're down to the last few minutes of the show, and I want to give you plenty of time. So if there's anything you would like to say to the listeners today, plug and promote absolutely anything at all you'd want, social medias, any upcoming acting gigs, anything you want, floor is all yours.
Well, I don't really have too much to plug right now for myself. As far as that goes, if you do want to kind of find out what I'm doing at any point in time, I do have a website. It is www.thecodyalexander.com. I'm hoping to get some new stuff up on there eventually here soon, once some auditions go through. But I would also just like to say support your local indie wrestling. Any wrestling fans that are fans of the WWE, every now and then, even if you, you know, don't, you know, follow indie wrestling, just go out and see a show. These kind of people are there for the fans. All the performers, like, want to see new faces. They want to perform for new people. And they just like being supported like anyone else. And they're trying to get to the point of, you know, WWE or TNA. So go out and support them. You know, you never know. One day that indie wrestler that all back then be your favorite wrestler on WWE. So, yeah. I just want to say support indie wrestling. If you want to find out what I'm doing anytime, check out that website I mentioned. And I think that is about it.
As usual, it was an absolute pleasure having you on Turnbuckle Turmoil today. I want to thank you for being our final guest here on Currently in Active Month. Great catching up with you, and hopefully I'll see you down the road sometime fairly soon.
Absolutely, and thank you for having me. It was a pleasure. It was all mine.
All right, fans, if you get a chance when Karn Alexander steps back in for one of his sporadic appearances, definitely buy a ticket. Go watch him. Look him up on the YouTubes. He was always absolutely phenomenal at what he did. And check out his acting work. I'm sure you're going to be entertained no matter what genre he is doing. And we will be back with you next week. Week from today, we will be joined by the Pacific Northwest Ladies Champion, Sunny Days. So make sure you're with us then, and we'll talk to you next week.